Welcome to Women in WP,
a bi-monthly podcast about women who blog, design, develop, and more in the WordPress community.
Welcome to episode 16 of Women in WP. I'm Amy Masson.
I'm Angela Bowman.
I'm Tracy Apps.
And our guest today is Kate Toon, an author, speaker, podcaster, and award-winning SEO consultant with over two decades of experience in all things advertising, digital marketing, and copywriting. Welcome, Kate.
Woohoo! It says guest chimes in, so I'm chiming in.
Yay!
We're so glad you can read the instructions.
Yay!
Well, if you've listened to the podcast, you know that the first thing we always do is ask everybody what their journey or path was to get to WordPress. So if you want to fill us in on how you started in WordPress.
Well, I worked at a big fancy agency in Sydney and I got pregnant by my husband. So that was kind of good. And I had to give up my job and I was like, I need a website. And some dude in the office, I was head of digital. So you'd think I'd know about WordPress, but I didn't. And some dude in the office said, I'll build your WordPress blog. And I was like, no, I don't want a blog. I want a website. I want a website. And he's like, it is a website. And I'm like, what? And he built me this website for my copywriting business, which was black and had flames up the side. It was so ugly. I wish I still had a picture of it because I was a hot copywriter. Get it? That was on the hosted version of WordPress. And then he went away and I had to rebuild it. And then I started ridiculously selling myself as a WordPress developer, you know, with my 1 week experience, built about five or six websites. And then since then I've built eight of my own sites and I don't maintain them as much as I used to. I break them and I get my developer to fix them. But yeah, I've got eight sites. I think that's pretty impressive. So I'm quite proud of that.
No more of the flames?
That might bring the flames back. And I really want one of those. Do you remember those tickers we used to have that used to
run?
Yes.
How many visits you have?
Yeah, I really want one of those.
How about the dancing baby?
I want a dancing baby. I want a
and
slider.
A blink tag.
I want a blink tag, a slider. I want parallax. I want everything. Just all of it. Everything moving, video, everything. Nothing actually readable or enjoyable, but just lots of flashing, blinking stuff. That's what I want.
What could possibly go wrong?
You want Link's used cars site is what you want.
That's what I want. Oh, it's a beauty. You have to include that in the show notes. We have to all see that again.
Yes. Yes, I will do
Can
that.
Can we use the Wayback Machine to pull up that old site?
I have so tried to find it, but it was only alive for like a month. And I think even the Wayback Machine was too disgusted with it to take a screen grab. So gone. It's only in my memory now.
We could have a contest for people to recreate your ancient website.
That would be awesome. And it was like, you know, that really professional thing. If I had like a picture, but I didn't have a professional one. So it was just a picture of me at like my friend's barbecue with someone else's arm next to my face. You know,
What would also be fun is if we explain our first websites to someone and they have to try to recreate it from our instructions.
That's beautiful. That's
it's like a criminal idea. Sketch drawing.
Yes.
Eyes are smaller, closer together.
More flashing.
More flames. More blinky.
More dancing baby.
More cowbell.
Awesome.
Oh, we should get serious and ask you some real questions.
Oh, yeah, we should.
Well, I have a real question. So when you left your big, you know, city job to start your own shop, were you intending to do websites or were you always just planning to do copywriting?
No, so I started off with like just an eponymous domain name, just katetoon.com. And really I'd been a producer and I'd been a copywriter and I'd done a bit of dev and a bit of design, like, you know, been in advertising for like 20 years. So I was like, I will just do anything for money because, you know, I was 5 months pregnant. I was a sole breadwinner and I gave up a big salary to do nothing. So I did a bit of project management. As I said, built some wretched websites. I apologize to those people who I built websites for. Did a bit of copywriting. And then I just realized that the real gap in Australia at that time was people who understood a bit about SEO, people who understood SEO copywriting. And so that became my niche. It should be niche, but you guys say niche, so wrong. And then I did that for about four years until I then kind of started wanting to do the whole passive income, and I'm doing air fingers. And then I kind of evolved into doing courses and memberships and all the other ridiculous stuff that I do now. So no, it's never a plan. I'm not someone who has a business plan. I just kind of go and do whatever I feel like doing, and it generally works out. Sometimes it doesn't. I did start a range of tea towels. That was foolish. SEO tea towels. I'm not joking. It was a thing.
Do you have one you can show us?
It was like this. I've got this sort of manifesto, but printed on a tea towel. It was awesome. I was going to sell them in my shop. I think I sold two. One was to my mom.
I would have taken one.
I know. I'm thinking it's a good idea. I might relaunch it. But I love my merch. I'll do anything to get some merch. So no, it's been a complete evolution, completely organic, and will continue to be so, I think.
What's your favorite thing of doing, just because you're all this creating, what's your favorite?
God, that's a hard one. I like earning money. That's one thing I really like about my business. In terms of the doing, I really like my conference. So I run a big conference over here called CopyCon, which gets about like 180 or so copywriters together. But that's a lot of work, but it's like a big party. Honestly, I enjoy the day-to-day. I enjoy fiddling around with my website and making little products. And it's the kind of the small stuff I enjoy, really, not the big stuff. The launches and all that kind of stuff is quite stressful. So I enjoy a day when I have nothing big to do, just little fiddles and fixing stuff in WooCommerce and stuff like that, you know, boring stuff.
So when you started your business, were you just doing copywriting, or were you doing SEO plus copywriting? Because that's, you know, I feel like SEO has kind of been like a really hidden thing for a while. And then the last 7 years, it's just exploded.
Well, I don't think you can write website copy without being an SEO copywriter. Like, I think it's ridiculous. I see people saying, oh, I'm a copywriter, but I don't do SEO. And it's like, well, if you're writing websites, it's inherent. It's part of it, you know? I think in the beginning, I was very much focused on, you know, just keyword research and web copywriting. And then you realize that you really can't be a good SEO copywriter unless you understand all the tech as well. So now I learn and teach, you know, all the tech before I teach keyword research. Because if you don't get your tech right, you can blog for 2 years and nothing's going to happen. I still see people now who come on my course and they have checked that box that says discourage search engines from indexing this website. And it's been checked for 2 years. And they're like, I don't know. I blogged every week. And so now I teach the tech and do the tech and the keywords and the copywriting and the backlinks and all the content marketing. Because I think it's holistic. You can't just do one little bit. Everything flows into it. I think too many people think SEO is a checkbox to be ticked. Oh, I've done my SEO. I've installed Yoast. I haven't enabled or done disabled any features within Yoast. I've just installed it. My SEO is done. Boom. And it's like, nope. Yeah, I haven't even started, but there you go.
I teach this 6-hour SEO class, and I started doing it because people were teaching like SEO concepts, like organic SEO concepts, but then not all the technical pieces of, you know, setting all those Yoast features and what to make sure that the search appearance has disabled anything like your sliders. Do you really want your sliders indexed by Google? Things like that. And so it's a really fun class. What do you feel like is the hardest thing with SEO when you're teaching? What do people have an opportunity to ask you questions? I find that people do have a hard time getting around that concept of what do I write about?
Yeah. I've tried very much to create courses where I don't have to be involved, because that's the dream, isn't it? But with SEO, it's just impossible. So I have a 7-week course with like 3 months of support, and it's the support that's my point of difference. Because you can go on Udemy. Is that how you say it? Is it Udemy or Udemy? I never know.
I say Udemy.
Okay. So you can go on there and buy a course, but the problem is that when you try and do the thing, your site just never seems to react the way that it does in the video. I don't know if you've tried like doing the new Google Search Console verification, but sweet Lord, it's the most frustrating thing. And you know, every stage something happens that you don't expect, and people need to be able to go, I've learned the why, I understand the what, I've implemented the how, and I'm stuck. Can you help me? So I think people still struggle a lot with the tech, because I think a lot of people just have a mental block like they do with maths. And then the mathsy techie people struggle with the creative. Like, what keywords do I go after? What do I write about? It's all been written before. So it depends on kind of if you're a left brain, right brain person. I've got a little bit of both. I think I'm middle brain or bottom brain. I don't know. But yeah, it depends on the individual. Some people just so struggle getting their head around the technical concepts.
Well, I mean, and also like I've done that where I'm like, okay, well, I'm gonna teach my client on how to do the Google Analytics. And then I fired up the conference call. And then I was like, and now you click on, they absolutely moved it.
Yes. And that's the thing.
Okay. Hang on a second.
Yeah. And you're scrambling. And this is it. Like I have a WordPress SEO course as well. And to be honest, I wish I didn't, because the amount of updates it takes, you know, when I started teaching SEO, people were like, you can't teach SEO. It changes too much. And it does, but it doesn't. But what does change is that Google moves a button one pixel to the left and people can't see it. It's still there. It's only moved a bit, but people have blindness. If it's not exactly like that, what you're showing them, they're like, mine's broken. It doesn't work. Oh my God. And so you have to remake the video. So I'm just coming out of it. I spend 6 weeks every year in a research and redevelopment where I pretty much rebuild my entire course every year. So it's definitely not passive income. It's good income, but there's nothing passive about it, unfortunately.
So when people take your courses, those are pre-recorded, but you're providing like actual support for them. And so is there like the support forum? How does that work?
So I use Facebook group for day-to-day stuff. And I use a question plugin on the site so people can submit questions via the site. And then we have a weekly Zoom call where they can all be on screen with me and I answer those. I time annotate the answers. I upload the videos so people who can't make it watch them. And then I do live demos in the group where I'll pick a student and fix an issue for them live in the group and they can watch that. It's not perfect. They get 3 months support. A lot of people don't finish the course in 3 months. We all know that course completion is a big issue. I'm up to about 70% completion, which is pretty good for a course. But then I have an ongoing membership as well, so if they keep wanting support, they can. But I just try and get them through the hard stuff, like the tech stuff. If they get that fixed, they'll never have to look at it again, really. Do you know what I mean? And if they get their keyword research done well, they'll have enough keywords to last them for a year, you know. So it's not perfect, but I think it works pretty well. I've had about 750 people take that course now.
Wow.
I know.
That's amazing.
How do they find you, or how do you find them?
Bizarrely, it's not so much SEO. It's not organic. It's because SEO course is possibly one of the most competitive terms. And obviously everyone going for it is pretty good at SEO. So for me, I have a big group on Facebook called I Love SEO that has about 7,000 people in it. And that's kind of the start of my funnel. And I give them a free course, and then I've got a low cost course, and then I've got a mid cost course, and then I've got the Bonza course, and then the membership, which has all taken a while to develop. Like, I had the big course with no free course, and then I had the membership before I had, so you know, I haven't done it properly. But yeah, it's a lot of word of mouth. I've obviously got my podcast, which, you know, I think podcasts are just amazing, and really build a lot of trust and authority. And I speak at events as well. So I just spoke at YoastCon in Holland, and I spoke at an event in New York, and that's helping me reach people beyond Australia a little bit more. But it's a bit of a mix, not very much SEO, bizarrely.
Have most of your students in your courses been in Australia, or have they been everywhere?
I've had, it's majority Australia, I think, for now. But you know, I'd say about 20% are overseas. So a lot of UK, Americans, Canadians, a couple of people in India and Asia, and it's growing. That side of it is growing. So it's a little bit harder with time zones, especially with England. It's almost impossible. But yeah, it's growing. I don't know. I think maybe Americans like learning from Americans, and I confuse people because they're not sure if I'm British or Australian. So, I don't know. And some people like my accent, but other people, I think it's like fingers down a blackboard. So you've got to like the person, eh? If you're going to listen to 100 hours of video on my course all up, you've got to like my voice and like me. Otherwise, you're going to want to stab me by the end of it. So
what is your podcast, and what format do you do?
It's called The Recipe. I've got three podcasts, which is ridiculous.
That's all a lot. One is enough.
It really is. So I've got one called The Recipe for SEO Success, which is an interview show. So I pick a topic each week, and I'm all about DIY SEO. So I don't talk about lofty principles. I really get into the how-to. So that's been pretty good. And then the other one's called The Hot Copy Podcast, and we teach copywriting. And then I've got one called The Confessions of a Misfit Entrepreneur, which is about my book and just about having a business and how wretched it can be at times and how fun at other times, you know? So yeah, I've got three. And Hot Copy, I'm pretty good because I've got a co-host and she forces me to publish it every fortnight. Recipe, I do when I can be bothered. And Confessions, let's just not talk about it. I did 10 episodes and I've forgotten about it for a little bit. I'm not big on consistency, I'm afraid.
Is your business, like what you spend your time on, is it all your stuff? I'm so envious if it is. Like, do you do any work for clients or are you all about you all the time?
I'm all about
not you, but I mean, do you know what I mean? You have your own thing.
I did. So up until 2 years ago, I still had copywriting clients. And, you know, I built all of this kind of, I've got two businesses, The Recipe for SEO Success and The Clever Copywriting School. So I've got two separate businesses and I built those while still copywriting and having a six-year-old, and it was very unpleasant and I was stressed and it was awful. And then about 2 years ago, I got to the level of income where I could finally kind of let go of my copywriting clients. And now I do the odd one just to keep my hand in. Like, you know, if it's a really fun job or a really good brand, I might do the odd copy job. But no, yeah, 99% of my time is all about me, which is fabulous, but also not fabulous because you get a bit self-involved and a bit lost in your own universe. Like, it's actually quite good to work on client stuff because it stops you thinking about your own nonsense. But yeah, mostly me at the moment.
How do you continue your learning? Like, I find that I learn so much by working on client projects because they're always bringing me new challenges. And I think that's what you're kind of making the point of. If you have someone else's project to work on, you might learn something new about SEO.
Absolutely.
Where do you draw your continuing knowledge from?
Well, I'll be honest, the whole reason I started the Recipe for SEO Success podcast, and I have a membership that goes with that, was to force myself to continue to learn, because I have to do a new episode every week. And maybe I'll do something about Google Data Studio or Google Optimize or Google Tag Manager or crawlability. And I know about it, but maybe I don't know it at that depth. So I get to speak to some absolute expert for half an hour. They also then come into my group and do a workshop. So I get another hour. So I become a subject matter expert on something. And my group, my membership group, they will tell me, they'll be like, look, we really want to learn. It's not just SEO, it's digital marketing. We really want to learn more about chatbots or automation. And I kind of want to learn that too. So that's how I do it, really, by responding to my audience and then pretending I'm doing it for them, but really it's all about me. So it works quite well.
That's totally awesome. And I'm totally envious. And I think it's so cool. And do you feel like you're much happier doing your work than having to work for clients, or what's your job satisfaction?
It's interesting. It's not better. It's different. So I did think when I stopped being a copywriter, oh, it's going to be great. I'm not going to have any clients anymore ringing me up, asking me for things. I'm not going to be anyone's creature working for them. But I am now, instead of having 10 clients a month, I have 2,000 clients a month. I have, you know, 400 people in my memberships. I've got 100 people on my course at any given time. I've got the groups. I've got, it's a lot of people. And I feel the pressure of that is a lot. So, you know, I can wake up in the morning to 750 Facebook notifications, and that's just Facebook. It's a lot. But I do love it, and I love the opportunities. I mean, you know, in my previous job, I wouldn't have got to go to like Holland and America and meet amazing, you know, and also I get to talk to people like you, you know, and I wouldn't have got that. It was just me in my hut, in my pants, writing copy with my dog. And now it feels like the world has opened up a little bit. So that's very satisfying, but it is stressful. Like, it's not to be denied that having this kind of level of visibility, there's a lot of eyes on me. And I feel like if I make a mistake, it's much more visible than it was before. And I sometimes miss the days of me in my pants, to be honest.
Conferences and WordCamps, and where have you traveled? What have you spoke at? What do you speak on?
Yeah, so last year I really wanted to break any kind of fear of public speaking. So I spoke at 37 events last year, which is a lot. Everything from 20 people meetups to WordCamps to big events. This year I did a couple of international ones. I was so chuffed that I got to speak at YoastCon. I mean, that's huge for me. Like, I had just applied and they picked me, and that was like, ah!
I was there. You were great.
I know. And I got to sit on stage with Rand, which is kind of crazy because, you know, only 4 years ago, I was looking up at Rand going, God, this guy's amazing. And then I was arguing with him on stage about stuff, which is brilliant. But it's a lot of work going to international events. It has killed me. I got sick. It knocks out so much time out of your business. It's hugely expensive because I'll be transparent with you. You don't get paid unless you are Rand Fishkin. So you are paying your way to go to the other side of the world and do that. It's a lot of money. It's a luxury that I can now afford. But what I really enjoy is homegrown events. I'm a huge fan of WordCamp. So we have WordCamp Sydney here and WordCamp Brisbane, which I've done every year. I speak about SEO, sometimes WordPress SEO, but also like copywriting, Facebook groups, you know, how to handle client calls and win more clients, like all different stuff. They're launching a new one here in Port Macquarie, which is a beautiful area. And I really want to go and do some worldwide ones. There's a WordCamp in Kuala Lumpur. There's one in Miami you were talking about, and WordCamp US. I mean, I think the people at WordCamps are awesome. You know, they're just not up their own bottoms, as I found, you know, and lots of events. It's all like, rah, rah, look at me. I'm awesome. Don't think that's the vibe at WordCamp at all. Well, it's definitely not here. I don't know if it is over there.
Yeah, same. Yeah, it's very much more a collaborative and community environment, which, if it wasn't, I don't know if I would love them as much and love speaking at them. It's my favorite crowd to speak at, such a wide range of people and technology, like levels. So great.
Yeah, I'm the same. And I've been to some big American events. I went to Social Media Marketing World, and you know, which is amazing, but for me just overwhelming and just not my kind of vibe, and just very six-figure entrepreneur, which I'm just a bit over. Whereas WordCamp just seems a bit more honest and just real people trying to have a nice business, a good lifestyle, help each other out. It's great. I love them.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I think we've all said in many of our episodes is how great that we have found the community. And personally, I feel so lucky that when I started using a CMS so many years ago that I just kind of stumbled on WordPress and like, I'm going to try this one without even knowing who was behind it. And now, you know, I feel like every time I go to a WordCamp, it's like a family reunion. It's like, I'm just seeing all these people I like. It used to be I go to learn new things, and now I go to see my people.
Yeah, that's totally it. And, you know, little sub communities pop up, like the Divi community, you know, and then, you know, there's other, obviously Beaver Builder and whatever, but like, I'm a big fan of Divi. I use Divi on all my sites. It has its flaws, I know, but I love it.
I'm a Beaver Builder girl.
Okay. No, we can be friends.
I just code it.
You just code it. What about you, Angela?
I use another theme that's based off Bootstrap, and it has its own page builder, but it's all going to be moving to Gutenberg. So I'm kind of in this awkward
transition
now, but I do a lot of template coding, but for the page layouts, I just use a simple layout tool, and I do most of the CSS just myself.
Yeah, I made my own.
This is it. I'm not a true developer. Do you know what I mean? I can edit CSS. I couldn't write it from scratch. You know, I can, a WYSIWYG is good for me, but that does get to a point for me, and I'm very aware of it, where it's gone beyond my capability. And that's when I hand over to what I would call a proper WordPress developer, you know? And
I say that, you know, there's nothing that Beaver Builder gives me I couldn't do on my own. I just am able to do it in a fraction of the time. I can do it so much faster, and that gives me the ability to do more sites and to make more money. So, and like you, I like making money.
Yeah. And I think it allows me to be nimble. Like with Divi, I can use Divi layout to make a sales page in an hour and a half and try it out. And if it doesn't work, I can take it down again. Whereas if I pay a developer to maybe hand code that, it's a big investment for me, you know? Maybe what I sometimes do is I'll knock up the page myself pretty basic using Divi layout. And then when I know that that product's going to be successful, I will then get a developer and a designer to come in and make it look even better. So that's what I did with my recipe course sales page. I just had it redesigned. It cost me a good grand and a half for a designer and a developer, but it's just schmicker. You know, there's things I know about Divi, but there's things that the developers know that just to make it just really schmick. And that's the way I do it. So I test it myself because I can be nimble, and then I get a pro to really make it look awesome.
That's really smart. I mean, and that's one of the things that I've also noticed when going to conferences is networking to find those people to like fill in the gaps. I would love to get back to Australia. I think, how many WordCamps are there around the country?
There are, at the moment, the Sydney and Brisbane, which is, and the Port Macquarie one's launching. I'll hook you up. I'll connect you with Dion and Will, who organize them. They would love to have some Americans on stage, I'm sure. You know, it just brings a different vibe to the conference.
And maybe we could get some sponsors. Amy, do you want to do your thing?
If anybody would like to sponsor the Women in WP to go to WordCamp in Australia, we would be open to such sponsorship.
You know what you should do? You know that Yoast has a development fund where they support women speaking at conferences all over the world, and they give out grants. So there we go. You should check that out.
And I did go all the way to the Netherlands for YoastCon, so I feel like I've earned it.
You've earned your stripes. They owe you. Seriously.
And I took a team of three. It wasn't just me.
Yeah, it was a good conference, though. Eh? They did well. They did.
It was really well done. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, good vibe.
How old are your kids now?
So I only have one, and he's 9. And I have a dog who's 11. And my son is actually quite involved in my business. So I've trained him on how to use Camtasia. So he edits all my videos, adds the intros, does the sounds, exports them, uploads them to Vimeo, and embeds them in my site, and gets paid $10 an hour, which is pretty good for a 9-year-old. And I'm going to a conference this weekend. I'm speaking at a conference in Adelaide, and I'm bringing him with me as my videographer. So it's the first time I've ever tried taking with my child to a conference, and I'm going to be really interested to see how it goes. So yeah,
that is so awesome. Makes me think I need to make better use of my 16-year-old son, who
I am huge, Angela, on insourcing. That's one of the reasons I've been able to do what I do. So I do outsource, but insourcing has been the biggest thing for me. So my son and my husband, my partner, you know, they do a lot, because, you know, as women, slightly sweeping generalization, we do tend to take on more of the life admin and the mental load. It's not even the doing, it's we're the ones that remember the dentist appointment. You know, it's that mental load of, it's school day, we've got to bring muffins in next Thursday because it's Jacinta's, whatever, you know. And so I insource an awful lot, you know, dishwasher, my son walks the dog, he sweeps the kitchen and the lounge, he does laundry, my husband does all laundry start to finish. It's like, you know, it gives, you know, money gives you a bit of power in the setup, but also my son's more than capable and he enjoys it. You know, he really enjoys it.
I see a blog post coming along, like age appropriate coding activities you can get your children to do.
Yes.
Ages 5 to 6 can do these.
It's really smart.
Yeah. Ages 5 to 6 can do Canva graphics. He was making Canva graphics when he was 8, you know. So, and then, you know, the Camtasia stuff, that's like a 7 or 8 step process. And he, you know, he's smarter than me. It's terrifying. Absolutely terrifying.
That's just so
and
awesome.
Very good marketable skills.
Yeah, I had my son make a video, a marketing video that I did use for Facebook ads for a different project. And it was fun. I just wonder, you know, how do you pay them? Is that like all under the table if they, you know, or do they just, you know, slave labor?
Slave labor. No, it's $10. He gets $10, which he then unfortunately spends on V-Bucks for Fortnite and buys like skins and things to put in his backpack. But, you know, what are you going to do? You know, he could be spending it on much worse, I guess. So, yeah.
I think that's such a weird term, a skin. I'm going to buy a skin.
I know, they're not cheap either, because he made me start playing Fortnite and I didn't like the skin, so I bought one. It was $25 for like nothing, for like pixels, you know? No wonder he's a billionaire.
So for your, going back to your SEO stuff, what do you find is the most common question that you get asked all the time?
I think especially for like WordPress developers, it's, you know, what are the top priorities in terms of coding? Like, you know, what are the best plugins? And I would, you know, I'd say Yoast is the best, you know, it's the best at marketing itself as well. I don't have the paid version, although I think now with the new schema elements that they're bringing in, you know, I think Yoast is, they're really trying, you know, they really are. And they work with a lot of the other plugins to make sure that they are all up at the same level and there's no conflicts. So, you know, people ask me about that. And then they ask, you know, what other plugins do I need? And, you know, I'm a big fan of like WP Smush and having a caching plugin and a good backup plugin and a good security plugin. And then, you know, I guess with WordPress developers, a lot of the time they will ask me, how far do I go? Like, what do I offer? When I say I do SEO, what should that mean? And I always say that you should basically leave your client with a site that's almost SEO ready. I don't think it's your responsibility to be writing title tags and meta descriptions and optimizing pages. And I think you're probably going to suffer if you try and offer ongoing SEO, because it's a very thankless task. So that's from WordPress developers. It's that, like, what, when you say SEO friendly WordPress site, what does that mean? And for me, it's all plugins installed and configured. It's explaining to the client what title tags and metas are, what on-page optimization is, what site speed, why site speed matters. It's Google verification with analytics and Search Console. It's, you know, security and backups, which don't sound like SEO, but they are, you know, basic stuff. Like, I still see people building sites without SSL certificates. It's like, what are you doing? Why? You know? Anyway, so all that kind of stuff, I think, is the biggest thing I get asked from WordPress developers.
Yeah, I think that's really great in that you're focusing somewhat on performance with WP Smush and probably some caching. And
yeah.
And I would definitely say in the Yoast search appearance, like, go through all of those, the content types and the taxonomies, and shut stuff off, like, before you hand the site over, just clean all that up for them at least.
I think it's our responsibility. And then I think, you know, things like schema, I think, you know, a lot of WordPress developers are a little bit frightened of schema. And I don't think we've got a perfect solution for WordPress yet. Obviously, if you've got WooCommerce, it does most of it for you. But, and I think Google AMP, people are frightened of that. So I just use the AMP plugin. It's not perfect. I get errors. But, you know, it's not like your client is going to ask you, please implement AMP and schema for me, because they don't know what it is. I think it's our responsibility to talk to them about it and explain what it is, why it matters, and whether they need it or not.
And do you find most of your clients are developers, or are they people that want to know, you know, be an SEO or...
It's a mix of both. Woof, woof. It's a mix of both.
I knew there was going to be a bark today.
I'm going to bark later in the episode, so just get ready for that. It's a mix. So I'd say about 60% of my people are small business owners, e-commerce stores. So they own their business. I get a lot of marketeers, social media marketing managers, copywriters. And I'd say about 15 to 20% are WordPress developers who want to know, who probably do know a lot. Like, I think a lot of people do my course for a bit of affirmation as well. Like, I think I know this, but I've read an article by Neil Patel. I've read a different one by Brian Dean. And then someone in Facebook said this, what is the truth? And I think I try and build up enough authority and show with my results that I can be a good source of truth. And I can say, look, Neil's kind of right, but he kind of pushes it a bit far. Brian's on the money. And that person on Facebook, your cousin's aunt's hairdresser, stop listening to them. You know, they don't know what they're talking about. So I think, yeah, a lot of WordPress developers come on and they know a lot of it, but they just want that final affirmation and to fill in the blanks.
And if you were going to list, like, your resources, who you think are the best people to be following in the SEO world, who would you list?
Well, I actually follow most people via Twitter. And I'm a big fan of Rand Fishkin, as I've mentioned, Cyrus Shepherd, who is an ex-Moz person. So he's very funny as well as being very informative. I like Barry Schwartz, obviously, who is search engine roundtable, I think it is. I always get mixed up with Search Engine Journal. I follow John Mueller from Google himself. And I just kind of follow the discussion. Dawn Anderson is another really, she's very techie, but she's good. So I just like follow the discussion, and those people tweet out interesting little ideas and articles, and they can become my source of information. So not so much Neil Patel at the moment. I feel like he's gone more into kind of content land, and a lot of people second guess some of the things he says about SEO. Brian Dean's really good and does really comprehensive articles. But a lot of it as well, I find it overwhelming. I mean, I do this for a living, but there's just so much information. So, you know, I try to limit what I consume, to be honest, and have like, okay, I want to learn a bit about AMP. I'm going to deep dive into AMP for 2 hours, and then I'm going to come out again, because the constant noise is overwhelming and makes you think that Google SEO is changing all the time, whereas it isn't. You know, it's just that people having opinions and trying things out, and, you know, so yeah.
So when it comes time for, you know, new information's coming out or new algorithm changes, how are you keeping track of that? And what are you telling, like, your students when these things are happening?
Well, I do think that Search Engine Journal and Search Engine Roundtable are good for news. So that's where I would get my news from. And obviously Google Webmaster Tools sends updates. So I get those. So if it's a Google Webmaster update, I will share it. But with everything, I'm like, you must take this with a pinch of salt. Google is like the police. Like if you go to the police and say, is this legal? Google say, no, it's not legal or it's legal. But we know that there's a fine line between the two. Like jaywalking, I think in America is illegal, but everyone does it. And it's not the worst thing in the world, you know? And it's the same with SEO. Some things are, don't ever do it. You know, don't repeat your keyword more than, but people do it and it's fine. And some of the bad things that we're told not to do, do still work. So I share Google. I would share Search Engine Journal articles, but again, with the caveat that often this is someone's opinion. You know, Ahrefs has done a study of 20,000 people and they've come up with these results. It doesn't mean it's the truth. No one knows. No one knows. So it's, you just have to, you know, often just use your common sense. You know, should sites be fast? Yes, because humans want them to be. Should you be able to get to every single page on the site? Yes. You know, is it important to have a title tag that explain what's the page is about? Yeah, it's all common sense, you know, and anything that isn't common sense and that's a bit muddy, you know, I'm a white hat girl, so I'll follow Google's advice, but I know that maybe I could cheat a bit and I'd still be okay.
And Google wants us to do things that we don't have to do and we don't need to do. So, yeah.
And often Google gives us stuff and takes it away. We all remember Google Plus. Remember when we used to have the little pictures of ourselves next to our listing? They took it away.
Remember Google Wave?
Google Authorship.
Yeah, Google Authorship. And so many people spent so much time implementing that and then they just took it away.
Oh, I miss it.
Yeah, I miss it too.
I loved being an author.
Me too.
And so in your courses, do you talk about building backlinks or that process at all?
Yeah. I mean, again, Google has the hard line of you shouldn't build backlinks. You should just be so awesome that people link to you organically. And it's like, well, that would be nice, but it ain't going to happen. So I don't believe you should pay for links, obviously, although people do and it works. So, you know, I do teach that, you know, I teach the low hanging fruit of, you know, directories and, you know, all the places that you can easily list yourself. But, you know, really the mantra is the harder the link is to get, the more worthwhile it is happening, worth having. So, you know, even like podcasting and being a guest on podcasts, I'll get a link, hopefully, better had in my author bio, you know, but that takes some time. We've set this up. We're going to talk. I'll promote it. You know, guest blogs, if it's a crappy site and you get your guest blog on it, it's probably not going to have that much impact. If it's an amazing site with authority and relevance and the audience love it, it's worth the effort. So I definitely teach that. It is hard. And to be honest, once you've fixed the tech, you've researched your keyword and you've optimized your site, all you have left is backlinks and content marketing. That's what agencies do month in, month out, is try and build you links. And it is really hard. We all get those awful emails saying, hey, I loved your post and I've written a post about this. Want to link to it? And we all just delete. So doing outreach well is impossible. So I kind of teach relationship marketing, which is like, I try and build relationships with people online before I try and get a link out of them. And I try and help them repeatedly before I ask for help. And that seems to have worked well for me so far.
I think that's really good advice because I know, you know, when I'm working with clients and I talk about backlinks, but you know, it's just that, like you said, you get a dozen of those emails every day asking to guest post, and I'm not going to let any random person guest post on my site, and nobody else is going to let me do that on their site. So why, you know, how do you go about getting them and doing it well? And it's really hard.
It is. And I think it comes out of taking a help first approach. So, you know, I will, you know, just see someone interesting on Facebook or Twitter, and maybe I'll read their stuff. I'll share their stuff. I'll comment on their stuff, and not just, hey, great post, but something relevant and interesting that adds value. And, you know, I don't do this in a kind of evil, nefarious, strategic way. It just happens naturally. Like someone you start really enjoying. And then 3 months later, they're looking for guests for their podcast or whatever, or they're looking for someone to guest post. And you go, oh, me. And they're like, you're not some stranger out of the blue. You're like, oh yeah, Kate, cool. I've seen you commenting for weeks and that's great. Thanks. And there you go. So I think that's the way to approach it. Just randomly sending cold outreach emails. I don't see how that works for anybody anymore. You know, I think it's very old school.
I keep getting them. So I figure it's working for somebody, but I delete them every day. I'm deleting them.
Yeah, same. Some poor fool is, but again, you know, I do see people in Facebook groups who are maybe just starting out going, oh, this person emailed me and they really want to be on my site, and they don't know. They think they're getting benefit from it. So it's all about educating people as well and letting them realize that they're not doing it to be nice. They want a link, you know.
Awesome. Well, we're getting down to the end of our time. So before we go, can you please tell us all where we can find you online?
Well, thankfully, I'm quite good at SEO. So hopefully if you type Kate Toon into Google, you'll find a lot of me and also a dentist in Ipswich in England who's also called Kate Toon, but mostly me and my various sites. So yeah, that Kate Toon, it's a stupid name, but it's serving me well.
Well, there is another Amy Masson, but she lives in Australia and is an event planner.
Oh, I'm going to go and Google her right now.
Well, thanks so much for being on today.
I've really enjoyed it. I love what you guys are doing. I think it's so important to promote women in WordPress, women in general. And I hope to see you at Australian WordCamp soon.
Yes, we're looking forward to that sponsorship.
Thank you for listening. Interested in being on the show? Sign up on our website, womeninwp.com. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and join our Facebook group to have conversations with other women in WordPress.